Hello and welcome to the Historics Vidcast here in leafy Buckinghamshire at the Historics HQ. This week I have auction specialists Dominic Lake.
Hello.
And James Hello. Good with me. Hello. Now, before we start, I just want to ask you to subscribe to this channel. It helps us out a great deal. It takes 2 seconds, so hit subscribe, subscribe to our channel, and you'll get more about us and these vidcasts. Now, this week we'll be discussing the cost of living crisis and how that may affect your classic car. Is it time to buy or sell this winter before next year? We'll have some news and some details about the Mercedes-Benz auction. But our main topic this week is our worst breakdowns with classic cars. It should be a good one based on the fact that the decades that we've been working in classic cars and modern cars, of course. So, on to our first topic, chaps. Tell me your worst breakdown.
Certainly one of them, Ford GT40. In the middle of the A316, going towards Richmond, crossing the 316, all electrics failed, and I couldn't get out. I couldn't start it. I couldn't move it. Just you so know, you've got a tiny little window,
and you're slightly claustrophobic.
And slightly claustrophobic. So peeking out of the window, going help, it didn't really help. But there was a massive traffic jam both east and west on the 316. North, I had to wait.
Did you get any sort of forgiveness because you were in a GT40?
No, none. No, in fact, worse. So people from the office came and just laughed and took photographs and eventually got pushed towards the 24-hour vet on Chalker's Corner.
What was the reason for the breakdown? What had happened?
Full electrical failure.
Full electrical
Usual thing. It was a kit car. So there you go.
Dom, go on. Is this modern or classic? Because you've spent years on modern cars as well.
So we were going on holiday to France.
Right.
And she said, make sure you've put some fuel in the car before we go. Which is a great idea, isn't it?
There's nothing wrong. Helps.
Trouble is, my mindset is that as soon as I finish work the night before, I am now on holiday.
Right.
And spent the time in the pub instead of going to the petrol station. Anyway, long story short, as we were heading towards Gatwick, I said, I don't think we've got much fuel left.
It's a sort of slip.
How little? And we saw our plane take off. I had a very, very quiet day. She didn't speak to me until about 6 o'clock that night.
It was, and 6 o'clock that night, still in the UK, not...
It's in the UK, and had to pay extra to get on the later flight and spent all day in Brighton going for lunch. And it was a really pleasant day in Brighton. But
what was the car?
It was a Land Rover. It wouldn't have mattered. It was pilot error.
Normally, as I said, they like to go home, but in that instance, they're going nowhere without any fuel. Nowhere. See, look, we had a good one, didn't we? Not all that long ago, with an MGB. Oh. And bear in mind, I would have been driving, Don would have been following, because he doesn't fit in an MGB. We took it from here, and we were to take it over towards Ascot, and just driving through, I think we had all the way through Windsor, nothing going wrong. We checked the water, we'd done all due diligence in a classic car, no problems. Got into the Great Park, and bing, 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 a spinner came off. Luckily, we spotted it, and it was, you know, just pinged off into the hedges. So pulled over. That's not right. That's odd. Get out the old hammer. Put the spinner back on, thinking maybe it was just loose. Travelled another two minutes up the road. Bing, bing. Off it comes again. At which point then we're starting to think there's a slightly bigger problem here than it's just not being taught.
We've been fitted incorrectly.
But we were stuck, weren't we? We're halfway through the Great Park. Oh, yeah. So we thought, okay, what we'll do is we'll tighten it up, drive a minute, stop, tighten it up, drive a minute. We got 500 metres down the road and at that point had to give up because it was becoming dangerous. And it would, yeah, the hub had been put on the wrong way round. So the inertia basically, every time you drove, was loosening the spinner. And crikey, how we got through Windsor without a problem. Mm. And in the end, had to phone up the plucky old recovery driver and had to get us there ourselves. Mm. Well, that's just simple. I think a lot of these breakdowns are just simple forget-me-not. They forget.
Most
that's
of them.
The way
I mean, I've driven a lot of the old sort of 1930s, 40s Bentleys, Rolls Royces, which are normally they're bulletproof, those engines. But when they do go wrong, of course, nobody in the AARAC or anybody else knows what to do.
Yeah.
And they're a big old lump, and you can't push them unless you've got six people behind you. So when they break down, it's just big news, because especially on the motorway, like the M3, as I did once.
Yes.
With the 1932 Rolls, which looks wonderful until it gracefully sort of breezes to a stop in the hard shoulder with everybody sort of slowing down.
You almost get that rubbernecking effect, don't you? What was that?
Well, you can't open the door because the door flies off. There's there's nothing to it.
But that's also a good tip, isn't it? Because with classics especially, and even modern motorways, especially without hard shoulders now, are slightly frightening in a modern car. In a classic now, my best advice is avoid the motorway. Whatever route you're taking, do not go on the motorway. Because even in the most reliable car, if it breaks down, that is frightening.
And I hate to say it, that the last breakdown I had was in You know what the love of my life, XJS, my own XJS on the way to the last auction, decided to give up on me. Water pump or something. Yes. Anyway, that was abandoned.
Although the buyer did know about this when they bought it at the auction, clearly. Just covering
Probably just didn't want to leave me, I don't think.
No. Well, yeah, it's the only loving person for an XJS is Dominic, and he's going to leave me. The worst one I had, battery-wise, actually, was at an auction. And as you know, because obviously when we get into Mercedes-Benz world, and we'll tell you this, it's very difficult. We have to go up and down lifts, we have to get through workshops, and we had a McLaren MP12-4. Oh, yes.
Pretty car.
Yeah. Which, what we didn't realise at the time, we've learnt now with modern cars, is that they all have showroom modes. Because if everyone opens the doors, every single battery just ignites. It sounds like a spaceship. Do that 50 times, because everyone wants to look inside it, the car's as dead as a dodo. And you can't just come along with some chirpy jump points and off we kick it. And because it's McLaren, of course, you couldn't get any of the dollies underneath it. So we're stuck. And the gearbox, of course, locks.
Oh, God, yeah.
So after about 15 minutes on a time deadline there, screaming and shouting at one another, one of the chaps, it wasn't one of us actually, one of the chaps that moved the cars for us just said, well, why don't we just put it on his trickle charger and leave it? Which is exactly what we did. We had to abandon it for the entire night, left it on his trickle charger, come along in the morning, as if nothing was a problem, turned it on, drove it out. But the modern car, it's all batteries. Everything's a battery problem. Because
well, and some of them have two batteries.
Yeah, leisure batteries and starter batteries.
And so on. I mean, they, you know, the Bentleys and the Rolls Royces, they're a nightmare.
So that's, I mean, that's just, it's terrible, isn't
and
it?
And you think it's really strange, you can have a battery in a car, you buy your Bentley Rolls Royce, which when they were built, they were the best cars in the world. Mm-hmm. Go and hold it for 2 weeks and leave it outside. It's dead by the time you come back.
Well, modern supercars, of course, they'll come with they all come with a plug-in, and it's not because they're hybrid.
Well, modern supercars, we've got a man that deals with that. You don't have to worry.
So anything else? Anything others? Oh, I do remember. I do recall. We won't divulge the details. I remember you setting light to a car.
Well, I did. Yes. In fact, it's not the first time it's happened. But yes, it was a Lotus Elan here in the showroom.
Don't divulge too many details.
Well, it was not our fault, however. There was an electrical issue with the injectors.
Your fault.
No. All mine. And the injectors had spewed the petrol out across the engine, which was hot, and the spark, and yes, the thing caught fire. Yes. So we sort of ran around with the fire extinguisher and pushed it out of the building.
Benny Hill sketch.
It was all. it was all fine, and it all got mended and spruced up and cleaned and sold. And
the irony about, you know, we chatted before, the irony about breakdowns, especially as you get more classics, I think with modern cars it's very frustrating, extremely frustrating, because you think, well, that's a modern car, the point is it doesn't break down. With classics, I think there's always a sense of, that's half the joy of it, the jeopardy, the fact that you have to be on your game, you have to learn about your car, understand your car. And there's sort of like war wounds. You go to the pub and you'll have the tales of what you had to do to get your car over the line. I remember John Williams years ago, and we had his GT6, I think, at Cop Hill. And we got to the top, and he genuinely actually asked someone for a pair of tights to fix the fan belt.
Yes.
And
silk.
And did it.
Silk.
And it only just about got to the bottom to get there, but it was part of the story. He probably still tells that story
now. The
fact
that he's got a sort of fetish as well might be something to do with it.
Yes, yeah, well, he never actually put them on the car.
Well, no, we took his off and had a hole in it.
So it is part of it. And people say, oh, yes, that's the problem with old cars. If you look at the stats, most cars that break down are modern cars. Your daily drivers break down all the time. I'll give you some stats about that later. But
old classics, like an old old classics break down and old houses leak. No. So.
Thanks.
General maintenance.
Brilliant, I've got both. So on from that, and ultimately we've gone through all that, what would you suggest key points to owning a classic car going for a traffic?
It's what you just said, isn't it? It's that maintenance, it's that preparation. So the standard things, keep your battery charged up, make sure you've got some fuel in it. You know, I mean, this applies to modern cars and old cars.
It's oil, a bottle of water,
yes.
Yeah. Basic.
Check them, change
just
them.
Just check them every single time.
Put a baseball cap or something warm, you know. Keep because if you do break down, it's never going to be a lovely spring day in a beautiful spot.
No, they're there to be used, aren't they? And I think they respond better.
Yeah. Check the wheel nuts. Sounds odd, but a lot of, not just spinners, I mean wheel nuts. I mean, do check that. It's such a basic thing, but it's very easy to do, even at home.
Yeah, I think anybody can do that. I think that's also why when we look through people and what they like to buy, the idea of one private owner or someone that's owned the car for some time and regularly been using it makes a difference, because you just know, well, if he's been using it, he's going to
never been out in the rain.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Why not? I mean, is the paint going to sort of disintegrate or something?
No, the underside. Depends on the car manufacturer.
It'll all come through.
If it's Italian, it might be the underside of the car. Maybe. So, yeah, so just keep an eye on those things and it should be fine. But ultimately, when we go through some of the details later, I think it's your modern car you need to be worried about. It's not your classic. So, on to the next step. Crisis. Now, our government has done a great job recently of breaking the economy. Rather than breaking down in our car, Liz Truss has sort of dropped a bomb on, and it's cost interest rates to go up, fuel prices, everything's gone through the roof. Now, how is that going to affect us and people with their cars? I mean, there's fuel, we've talked about fuel before, and ultimately, I don't think that has a great deal of difference because we don't tend to use our classics every single day. I mean, it's going to hurt a little bit if you've got a V12 or a V8 at the moment. But obviously, interest rates are on the up. People, energy prices, what do we...
Well, I think it depends, you know, on the individual as to why they bought the classic in the first place. When did they buy it? Will they need that money from the classic to pay for a school bill or for housing or for a problem with the house or whatever it is? Will they need to realise that cash?
So do you think
that's one thing that people are going to be looking into now with the rising costs of everything else? So or can they keep their toy?
So it's possibly price points may play a big point in this. You know, if you're able to be playing with toys up above £150,000, you're probably less
exposed to that.
Yeah, I think 200 grand or possibly a little bit less. But that upwards, I don't think they're really bothered about the cost of oil. But, I mean, you have an oil tank at home, I think.
No, do you know, I got rid of my oil and went full electric. Yeah. That was a great idea. Yeah, that's gone through the bloody roof as well. So we don't...
those, you know, with an oil tank, for instance, I know there are plenty out of the country that do, that cost would have... I mean...
Exponentially, it's three times the cost.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's all sorts of reasons why people want to relinquish their classic for those reasons.
Although I think in the main, the classics that we sell are to people who keep them as an extra, a spare, a special car. So I think it's money that's been put aside for that fact. Mm. And unless you come to sell it, I think it's paid for. People don't generally borrow the money to buy out the cars that we sell. I just think that it's disappointing that when you come to sell it. But in the meantime, just enjoy the thing. You know,
it's one small pleasure.
You won't lose it. And, you know, it doesn't make an effect until you realise your asset, does it? I mean, I know it's a dull thing to say, but just enjoy the thing.
Just turn the heating off, put on a dressing gown, a pair of slippers, and keep your classic. I mean, ultimately, I think there will be a movement. There's going to be a movement, because you'll say some people will get themselves into strife and think, actually, one of the things that will go will be, I'll sell that car.
Wear your dressing gown slippers in your classic.
Yes, maybe.
Keep you warm.
And so... it will move the market, but ultimately moving the market is no bad thing with regards to values. And people get this misinterpretation that because people need to sell, prices will plummet. That's not actually always the case. The worst thing from an auction perspective, and classic cars, is where everyone just wants to sit still and do nothing. Because then everyone just asks for too much, won't offer enough.
The classic car market never really sits still. Because if you've got the money, now's the time to buy one.
Yep.
If you need the money,
now's the time to sell it.
So... it's a win-win both ways. And luckily, you know, we're in the business where, you know, yes, the market has an effect, but for us, the effect, you know, we have to be more careful about the pricing of a car.
That's correct,
sure it sells. Yeah. And the vendors have got to realise now that it's not a market to test, like a litmus test, and just see, will I be able to sell it? Can I make a profit? It's a question of, do you want the metal or the money? Do you want to sell it? And if so, price it accordingly. And the buyers are sitting there waiting with their hands on their lap.
Well, there's
thinking,
always a buyer.
Well, now I can buy that now. Yeah. I couldn't afford it a year or two ago. Now I can. So, different reasons.
Okay. So, with that staunch advice, next auction then. The next auction is at Mercedes-Benz World. I love Mercedes. I love going there. And then as soon as we've got out of there, I think, thank God I don't have to do that all over again. It's a mammoth get in, mammoth get out. But it is an
I suppose what's nice for us, isn't it, that we are at three or four different venues over the year. So we've got that nice bit of variety. I prefer and like Ascot Racecourse, but Mercedes-Benz World has got a real special place. It was the first auction that I did when I started. They provide lunch in a really good canteen, which is, you know, quite pleasant. There's just a lot of variety there. So yet again, we take over quite an iconic building and we have most of it to ourselves. I think it's really quite an amazing thing that we do.
I think the building is superb, and I think most people that don't know it, when you attach that picture to an email and say, well, this is where your car is going to be on the first floor, and they go, wow, okay.
If we can't believe it, it's not surprising that they can't.
It's a modern car showroom, isn't it? Cars look fabulous under the lights.
It does look good.
It's a nice place to visit. Mm-hmm. If you're visiting for the cars, you've obviously got a nice place to wander around and look at these cars. There's the track and all the experience days, which I'm sure they do roaring business when our customers come along. Yeah. And then obviously downstairs, them trying to entice you in to buy a new
Mercedes. It's great to see somewhere that's just for cars and the love of them and to be so busy. Yeah. You know, people driving them, buying them, seeing them, interested in the history of them, the future of them, Formula One section. They've just got everything there. It really is really is impressive.
So what have you got lined up? Any nice cars you've seen on the board that we've consigned? It's consigning now, so keep an eye online. There is plenty
not,
to see.
Not an expensive card I've got.
Cool.
But you know, I've got this thing about the 80s, because I remember them. I mean, not even.
Gosh. I was born.
Yeah, but don't. MG Metro is the sort of car that my pals' moms had, and we all aspired to get something like that. And I've consigned one of a fantastic customer of mine, a real enthusiast, who also collects chopper bikes as well. And we know that as a company, we've got a link with Gary's charity ride with chopper bikes.
Yes, of course, yes.
So I've got an MG Metro coming in, turbo bodied kit, white. I mean, this thing looks stunning. Photos will be on the website later this week, so MRR photographers out to take pictures.
You know that's going to be a favourite of Vicky's, don't you? She's going to love that. She would have probably has
everyone
had. If Vicky likes
era.
It, I like it.
I passed my driving test in one of those.
You didn't pass your test? Yes, I was going to say, are you sure?
I did. No, I think
I've seen
I
you drive. Are you sure?
What about yourself, James? Anything that you've got your eyes on?
Well, I've got two, actually. One in particular, the Maserati Bora, which is a fabulous looking car. Completely restored, 150,000 mile restoration, engine out, redone by the Ferrari Center, put back in and so on. It has a small backfire which needs to be sorted out. The vendor is rather elderly, doesn't have the time or inclination to get that fixed. Probably engine out, fix it, maybe a small fix, not quite sure, but he doesn't want it back. It's now no reserve.
No
reserve.
Now
that is a hell of a no reserve. That car's worth 160 to 180 any day of the week. And it's now no reserve. So I think that's a real
litmus test. It shows you.
Litmus test of the market will be what that will go for. I think it's going to be fascinating on the day.
And people are always worried about the no reserve. When you're able to do it, and you've got to have the balls, but it makes a difference. The amount of bidders that will be lined up.
And there's a full photographic record of its restoration. It's all there. You can speak to Ferrari Center. There's no secrets. You can speak to everybody. I mean, it is. The car runs and drives. So fine. It just has this backfire. But what a great car.
What about you, Matt? What have you got?
So I've got a couple I've been thinking of, but there was one I signed up the other day, which was sort of what I'd call typical auction story. I went and consigned last week this lovely Zodiac Mark III. Now, that's not really normally something I specialise in. In fact, Sarah Crabtree's probably going to give me chapter and verse about them. But it, an amazing story. It had been featured in Classic Ford. It had been found in a barn. What's it found? It had been showed to someone in a barn by the brother of the original owner, who had generally only ever used it, you know, not in the wet, on high days and holidays. So it was in stunning condition when it went in. The fella passed away and it was just left there, covered under dust in this barn. Uncovered in the late 90s. His brother sort of said, no, he's got to go. So the guy's thinking, oh, I'm not really that fussed, go and have a look at it. Pulled it out, washed it off. But for a little bit of microblisting on the paint, it's like brand new. And what I am aware of these old Fords is normally there's welds, there's repairs that have to have been, not a single weld on this car. It is actually physically as it would have come out of the factory.
No rust.
Unbelievable.
The dust would have protected it.
Well, the dust caused a bit of a problem with the paintwork. So what they did is they took off the top layer, repainted the exterior, but everything else is as new. Nothing else has changed. And when they stripped it, they could check and every panel as it should be, which is
great.
Incredibly unusual. That's a great little car for auction. And the other one is I quite fancied. I've got a Pagoda coming in. It's Mercedes-Benz. Well, there's going to be Pagodas 190s and a cheap little 230 manual. Great little touring car. Yeah, that's
one entry I do have to mention, which is it's not quite a car, sort of. It's an original wooden Buck used by Jaguar in 1954-55
really?
To build the original Jaguar D-types on. And it was in the factory, and it's what they put the aluminium on, rolled it over that, and whether any of the works cars were built on it, we're not sure, but it's the long-nosed Jaguar D-type.
Sure.
And this is the original Buck from the factory, which we have in the auction.
So not a replica,
this is a genuine original thing.
Wow.
And, I mean, it is a piece of history.
What's that estimated
at, James?
Around 60,000 to 70,000 for this thing, probably a bit more. But
rare piece of history.
Very. And of course it was used, Lofty England was the Jaguar manager at the time in the 50s, who managed the Jaguar Le Mans entries. There was OKV 1, 2 and 3 and so on. They were all works cars. And then there were some privateer cars, etc. Only about 71 D-types ever built. So this, you know, is a piece of history. There weren't many Bucks at the time, probably only about three. And this is one of them.
Well, the irony is, not only is it a rare piece of history with great provenance, people remake these for art now. Well, so it's actually a piece of artwork with provenance.
Lynx Engineering used this particular one in their factory to build the Lynx D-types, yeah, which are fantastic as a replica. But I mean, if you've got an original, what better thing to have? If you smack it up at Goodwood or somewhere else, you can get it repaired.
Ever the optimist.
In your garden. Anyway, it's a fabulous piece of history, and I think it's going to be very interesting on the day.
Good for you.
I think it's going to be. It'll be a great sale, actually. Yeah. And if you aren't sure of what we've got in the auction, have a quick look on historics.co.uk. You can also follow our social media sites, like Instagram. All the chaps have got their own Instagrams, which, when we go out and see cars, we'll often post about the cars that are upcoming before.
There's
the
a video
shows.
Of the MG Metro on there, actually.
There you go.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
So, on to a little bit of fun, chaps. So let's do a little quiz. Let's do a breakdown-based quiz. So I'm going to ask
you. Is it 80s pop music? I'm really good at that.
It's never going to be 80s pop music. Sorry. So, first question, breakdown related. How many breakdowns did the RAC attend last year? When I say last year, it's what Google tells me, so please don't shout at me. Or do shout at me, it's always good fun.
365 days.
Yep.
Not millions.
Okay, well, if I give you three, I'll give you three choices. 1.5 million, 3.5 million, or 2.5 million?
Which is millions. I don't know. 2.5 million.
2.5 million?
Actually, more than that.
It's 2.5 million. And I think these are probably a year or so old. That's 7,000 breakdowns a day. Mm. So, Tony, that's not classic cars.
Modern cars
for you, isn't it?
Battery related.
Well, we'll get on to that, I think. Okay, so this is a good one. Mm-hmm. What is the most common day for breakdowns, and why do you think?
Monday.
Why do you think Monday?
Because you've left them unattended over the weekend. Right. Battery's gone flat.
That's good reasoning.
I think it's a Friday because they've left them all week. Get it on Friday to go away at the weekend.
Mr. Good has managed to steal a march there. It is Friday, and that might be a very good reason for it, I suppose. Because if you do have a third car, then that may be the case.
Don't leave the cars unattended. Do start them up.
Right, according to what car? What is the most reliable car brand?
Something Japanese, I suppose. Nissan or...
So we've got Nissan?
Something like that. Toyota.
It's Lexus. So I suppose it's even the premium brand of a Japanese one. So interestingly, they have a reliability rating of 98.7.
Gosh. Also the biggest engine, Lexus. You can put a glass of champagne on top of the engine and rev it all you like and you won't spill a drop.
Useless information. I like it. That's good. Yeah, there you go. Always there. So just to do an indication, the top are there seven. So the first was Lexus with 98.7. Then Dacia. Well, that's cheating, really, because there's nothing in those to go wrong.
That's the way forward.
It's a pedal car.
I mean, Hyundai. I mean, they score high. Suzuki. Mini's up there quite high, which is interesting. BMW built. Toyota.
Yes,
and Mitsubishi. So quite literally, all of the air conditioning manufacturers have come high there. So. A reverse of that. So what's the most unreliable car of 2021? Again, according to what car? I'm going to give you three choices on this one. Nissan, Ford Fiesta, or Porsche Cayman? Nissan X-Trail, I should say. Nissan X-Trail.
Oh, I don't know. Ford Fiesta.
Nissan.
It is the Nissan. And now, absolutely frighteningly, it has a 59.7% reliable. So it's pretty much a flip of a coin when you get in the morning. Will I get anywhere?
Extraordinary. One of the most popular cars in Australia is the Nissan X-Trail.
Wait, but they're not worried about getting anywhere. They just go to the pub anyway, weren't they? I think the Porsche Cayman was second. And then, disappointingly, my wife's car came third. Land Rover Discovery. I'm not altogether that surprised. And yet again, Land Rover's like to
thank
go
God
home.
For the warranty you've got, Matthew.
Oh, God, yeah. I should Extend be on a kickback from warranty, really. Get a warranty on any Land Rover. Finally, according to the AA, what's the most common reason for a breakdown in the UK?
And I think James mentioned it earlier.
We've probably nailed that one a few times.
Yeah, we definitely
second
that.
It's only fools are run out of fuel, so that's like me.
Yeah.
Is it the battery?
It's got to be the battery.
It is the battery.
It's the biggest problem we have at auctions.
So you've got to bear in mind, everyone worried about breaking down in classics. I mean, a battery is a battery. It's the same battery. Just make sure you've got a nice battery in your car.
All these lovely electric cars and so on. Imagine the factories that are building the batteries that go into the battery cars.
Well, I suppose the only uptake on that is if you've got a battery car and it's got 50 batteries, if one fails, you've got another 49. Was that no logic in there?
Not quite sort of like underfloor heating, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah.
You sort of find the problem and dig it all up.
Okay, so thank you very much for that. Let's wrap this up. That was good fun. Thank you very much. So if you remember, if you do enjoy this, please check out our YouTube channel, subscribe, look at our back catalogue of podcasts with Vicky and Tom Exton and any of our driving in videos. Like and subscribe to our Instagram accounts. We're at Historics. I'm at Matthew Pretty. Do you want to tell me your Instagrams? Do you know them?
Dominic Lake at Historics.
There we go.
James at Historics.
There you go. Follow these chaps. You can see what they're up to and where they're consigning cars. Keep your eyes peeled for the next episode of Driving in Cars, which will be in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully, with both Tom and Vicky at Mercedes-Benz. We'll have to pick a couple of cars for that. And from me, from James, from Dom, thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.